the counter narrative actually starts to have a lot of value. If everybody's saying good things, you know, you can see it all across regular media. If everybody's saying good things, then actually the built up, pent up value is in saying the not good thing. And that will actually attract, even if it attracts less clicks, it still can proportionally, it can still be a large number of clicks. And that series, if you will, like I said, was the first time that I felt we didn't have the sophistication to understand how to quite cope participate in that conversation at the time.
This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Solutions, the leading iGaming PAM platform with a modular approach, including many benefits like a fast, secure, and scalable API-based platform integrated with all major third-party products and services. Make sure you head over to Pragmatic Solutions and join our smart thinking.
This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Play, a leading game developer providing player favorites to the most successful brands across the industry. With an award-winning multi-product portfolio of slots, live casino, bingo, virtual sports, and more, Pragmatic Play is powering up new possibilities of play through one single API. Visit pragmaticplay.com and discover your favorite every time.
And boom, we are live here today with Matt Dewey, the co-founder of Rubet. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm good, Pierre. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent, thank you. Here we have our next New York show coming up here next week, so we are in full preparation mode at the moment. So I have to thank you a little bit for giving me a bit of a break from all the craziness at the moment.
Totally good. I appreciate you having giving us kind of the forum and the opportunity to share a little bit of our perspective, our worldview.
Absolutely, Matt. And so kind of the background to this episode today is we want to talk a little bit about kind of this new generation of iGaming operators, if you will, that has become more prolific in recent years, and Rubet certainly being part of that new generation of operators. And so to that point, Matt, I wanted to start off today here by just asking you kind of, what was the, how did Rubet came to life from the very beginning? Can you talk about the inception story?
Yeah. I always like to explain, what's funny is it takes a few years to get perspective on what you're going through. And Rue's origin story, we like to say, is as unique as the product itself. You know, a lot of us didn't come from iGaming backgrounds. And I think a lot of that shines through on the way that the product looks and feels, you know, the website, when you're playing on Rubet, it's just different. It's clear that it's homegrown. It's a platform that we built from scratch. And, a lot of us, you know, myself anyway, came a little bit more from the, you know, crypto background. You know, so I was working, interestingly enough, I was, kind of getting made fun of, being on the marketing team at a blockchain company that was really bullish on NFTs in like 2018. And I remember, our perspective at the time that NFTs on Ethereum wouldn't really work. And so we spent a lot of time educating, I spent a lot of time educating first myself and then trying to educate other businesses, because we were a microservices sort of organization that offered interesting ways for tokenization and other businesses to offer their services on the blockchain. But that began my sort of fascination with this whole world of, you know, of crypto and digital currencies and all of this stuff. And I met a lot of people who were doing interesting things, also building, you know, product and websites in that space. I'd be remiss to not mention that, you know, a huge part of our background at Rubet is Counter-Strike, you know, CSGO, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, the game, which I always like to think of as, you know, once you get into virtual items trading and people sort of using these items in very interesting ways, trading them, some developers at the time, you know, they were like 2015, early times, you know, they were are building cool stuff in exchange for, Counter-Strike skins and things. And just all this creativity, it's a very vibrant community even to this day. And like I said, one that was largely invisible for a long time, but a lot of very creative and interesting entrepreneurs have sort of blossomed out of that community. And I like to think, Rubet is one of those businesses that did.
Yeah, that's interesting. So my question, follow-up question on the NFT side is, did you keep your diamond hands here, Matt? Did you manage to stick through?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm an idiot. I can't help
you and me
it,
the same, my friend. Yes.
I just, there's something about there's something about crypto that fascinates me so much. I feel like these networks are being battle tested day after day. In this stretch that comes out of a bull market or a bear market. DeFi summer, these sort of, it kind of brings this next layer of leverage and volatility into the market, and yet somehow the network stays resilient. And that really has, and it's interesting that the user, just regular people like myself, I'm not overly technical, are able to maintain self-custody. You don't have to sit and send your money to a third party on an exchange. You can instead hold on to your, to your digital cash, if you will. I do hold my crypto. I always kind of have, and I don't know. I guess I'm glad that I did here, but who knows what tomorrow brings? Exactly. I try not to even look at the price of Bitcoin because it's. It's wild.
For your mental health, for sure. Yeah. I'm keeping my Mebit to the bitter end, my friend. My NFT, I still have it. So
yeah,
Who knows? There.
Yeah, I minted a little mutant ape, and I told my dad at the time. I said, "Dad, I muted this ape," and I showed him a picture of it, and he said, "Well, how much was that thing?" And so, I paid about $2,000 in Ethereum to mint this, and he's like, "I've never seen him look so disappointed in my life." But I hold on to that and onto that thing, and I'm part of that project, as many are, and it'll just be interesting to see where these different crypto businesses take, all of us.
Exactly.
Such a strange internet thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and cool. I find it interesting, Matt, here, because of the previous crypto summers, you kind of have a new influx of entrepreneurs that are born from that summer, right? Which has kind of reflected and passed into other industries. So you mentioned, of course, the kind of CSGO skin trading, and obviously within the iGaming industry, where all of a sudden, kind of a new generation of operators viewing what online gambling is from a completely different lens, with from perhaps a new generational lens as well, kind of disregarding a little bit what happened in the past and trying to kind of innovate based on what the users of today's internet age are looking for. And so I'm curious to understand a little bit more, like, obviously Rubet saw some great success after you founded the company, and what would you say the keys, in your opinion, is to the success that Rubet has seen to date?
Yeah, I think our what we would have considered one of our greatest weaknesses at the time has kind of turned into one of our greatest strengths over the last years, which is, like I said, that we didn't necessarily come from the iGaming world, so we didn't come in with a lot of the sort of preconceptions corporate standards, if you will, of how things must be done. And instead, we were just following particularly product. We focus very much on the product that we're building, and we try to, as corny as it sounds, we try to just follow what's fun. We pay a lot of attention to other people that are sort of in our space. And I think there is a pretty small community of us kind of feed off of each other with different product ideas and things that are coming next. And that's why I think you're seeing, I was at ICE and I was talking to a colleague, and I remember saying, 3 years ago or something, I remember a lot of people at Rubet, they'd say, "Oh, you have the Rocket game. You know, that's the Crash Rocket exactly. game, right?" And nobody had really, it wasn't really a game that was taken seriously. But the thing about Crash is, if you've never seen Crash, it is a very interesting experience because it has all of the elements that you want. You know, you feel a bit of control during that game. You know, when do I cash out? It's an adrenaline rush. It's an interesting game. And when I went to ICE this year, I couldn't look in any direction without seeing five providers that are offering Crash or some version of house games right. that were originally available on Rubet. Now, I'm not saying Rubet should deserve credit for those things, but you know, I do think it's interesting the way that the industry is evolving. You know, with these house games that are not just, you know, a slot machine or dice or something like that.
Right, Matt, interesting. So you mentioned the Crash games. It's like quite interesting phenomenon. And like you, I was at ICE the other week as well and noticed the Scribe, you know, massive exhibition booth, of course. And I spoke to David there, the founder, and he talked about the like insane volume that they see every single second from Aviator. And sure. It was quite fascinating to me, you know, because this is one of the great examples of a product that came from kind of left field that... where yeah. other game providers are looking to create innovation within the real-based games or, you know, Evolution, yeah. looking to, like, throw money at the kind of game shows and, you know, the more expensive game show, the better kind of thing. Here comes an innovation that is just so simple that you almost feel a bit stupid not to think about it, right? And there's something magical with that game, right? It's like the tension of, like, yep. winning more, but also... potentially losing everything. There's something magical with that, right?
Yeah, yes, and it's social too. It gets better when you're playing in a group because it's almost like a game of chicken or something where who's going to cash out first, last, you know, who's holding on. It's certainly a different element since everybody's playing on the same sort of numbers at the same time. You know, it's more of that same feeling that you get when you're standing at a craps table or you're playing roulette with your friends or something like that, right? Everybody you know, potentially wins together, loses together. People separate their bets. You know, they diverge from the group. They take risks by being the loner, and either they win, you know, they win or they lose as a result. And it's all the conversation and the social sort of connection that happens around that with friends and also with strangers. Probably, you know, like, also one of the things I love about this industry is that you meet a lot of people, and yeah, all of that happens, you know, on Crash, and that's that was just a fun sort of moment. I think, I guess, I was standing there smiling myself, kind of in the aisle, you know, thinking about it, and just realizing that it. You know, I think brands like Rubet. You know, the brands that do come out of left field, to use your words, they do make a mark on the industry. You know, I think in some ways what we feel maybe was our weakness, which was just a gap in knowledge. You know, we were missing some best practices when we first came onto the field. You know, we needed to hire a lot of talent in. We needed to, you know, bring in some experience into the company. And we've done all of that. It took years. It took a while. But, you know, still at its core, you know, Rubet is a different type of gambling brand, you know, like, and so we started kind of as just this little corner of the internet, you know, this little club with just a handful of users. You know, I think in our heads, especially when we think about products, sometimes we go back to that place. And we try to make things that are just totally unique and different and fun to us. So, it's fun to see where the industry heads because the industry also moves insanely fast, very competitive. And I think that is exciting probably for everyone around that enjoys the game.
Another perhaps similarity that you have between Scribe and Aviator and yourself, of course, is the partnership that you have set together with the UFC. And obviously, Rubet has been quite active when it comes to the brand ambassadorships that you have been able to set. I'm a big UFC fan myself, of course, so I am very proud of our industry every time I see a Rubet logo appearing on the canvas or whatnot. But you've also set some pretty big brand ambassadorships with the likes of you know Sean Strickland, Brand Moreno, Charles Oliveira, of course, and outside of UFC, also with one of the biggest pop icons of our time in Snoop Dogg. And I'm really curious to understand a little bit from your perspective how you activate these brand partnerships, because I've seen a lot of examples in the industry of perhaps other organizations that are kind of signing a big name and then not really being kind of prepared for how to maximize the value from these partnerships. So I'm really curious to know, understand how you pursue these brand ambassadorships.
Totally. It's an easy mistake to make too, and one that I have to be honest with you, we've Rubet made along its journey as well, is depending on the experience level of the, we could say celebrity or influencer or, you know, or even the type of sponsorship, the, you know, the industry or sport that you're sponsoring somebody in, a lot of sports are, there's the sponsorships, there's sponsorships all over, you know, it's like brand graffiti all over their body. And sometimes those relationships, they're not quite as deep. And it's easy to just put your logo on someplace as a marketing team and feel like you've accomplished something, that, and nobody can quite measure it. I mean, I come from a PPC background, a paid, like a paid search, paid media sort of background. I'm sort of that generation when, you know, pixel retargeting and all this sort of stuff was coming in and marketing started to get very technical in the digital world. And I've always really enjoyed that. I never believed in brand marketing. I never believed in, you know, in influencer stuff. Again, to use influencer as a marketing word, because we don't use that word too much at Rubet. We usually like to think of influencers as content creators. You gain influence because you have interesting things to say. Your perspective is interesting. And in a way, it's kind of like art on social media. You know, those moments, this relationship that these artists and creators basically gain or create with their following, their followers. I don't know about you, but the people I follow online, I feel like I know them. They don't know me, but it's this very sort of interesting parasocial relationship. And I think what's important is everybody in that, everybody who follows anyone can feel when a partnership or a sponsorship is forced. And so what we 100%. Try to do, it's right. It's you know,
when it's not product organic, placement.
Yeah. You know it when you see it. It's, I mean, even you know, Netflix, who kind of monetizes that way off of product placement. When you see that the Pepsi can perfectly placed in that scene, you're like, exactly. Okay, you know, oh, yeah. He just pulled up in the third Mercedes. Oh, wow. You know,
exactly. With the logo perfectly panning into the camera.
Yes, Rick. Exactly. And so we make a point not to do that. You know, we try to let the creator be themselves. And we try to find those natural connection points of what that creator sort of thinks or believes or is valuable to them and what we think or believe and is valuable to us. So that's, that's our general approach, is to try to keep it authentic and natural. And depending on the size of that person, they are like they're following some. They don't even let you dictate their content at all. So you wouldn't have a choice even if you tried. And not everybody has experience working with those types of individuals. But Rubet actually has a lot of experience. I think it's one of our strong suits.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point you're making, Matt, in regards to the kind of organic way to find these brand ambassadorships. And I can remember one example. I'll bring up with a former operator who was signed one of the biggest music artists as well, like a really big pop icon a couple of years ago. And it didn't really resonate with kind of the gambling experience and kind of her personal brand, I'd say. But on the other hand, it was with Nicki Minaj, it was in this case.
I know who
was signed to an American operator back in the day. And it didn't really resonate, you know, between the between that brand ambassador and the brand itself, you know. And you know, I can imagine that you get sometimes these opportunities to sign really big brand ambassadorships with celebrities with huge followings and so on. But it must be tempting sometimes to sign this partnership. But is there a thought process there? Like, how much does this person resonate with the brand? Like, how much does this person, like when they communicate with their audience, how authentic is that?
Of course.
And so on. How do you think about that?
Yeah, of course. Those opportunities, I mean, it's a whole industry. So those opportunities come our way constantly. I think the things that we're usually paying attention to is not to overuse the word organic, but it's how did that opportunity arise? You know, how were we introduced to that, you know, to that person? And the more natural that feels, that is sort of one checked box. The other one is when we talk, how is that conversation? We want to have direct conversations with the people that we're working with so that we can understand them as their perspective as a person. Like I was sort of alluding to before, what makes them tick? What excites them? How did they get started? What do they like talking about? What content do they like to create? Because if it's forced, if it feels like, you know, they're a character in an ad, nobody likes that experience. Literally no one benefits from that type of advertising. When a person, on the internet says that, they like Rubet or they like our company, they like us. I think they need to mean it. Otherwise, like I said, it doesn't really feel right. But if for the practical folks out there listening, it's not really even about feeling. It also doesn't perform because it's not true. So we look for that sort of authentic connection, you know, with creators, so that we can provide the means to create interesting and fun content that actually does, you know, sort of go viral, or viral is probably it's not really something anyone can control, and it's not necessarily the goal. But it shows, you know, consistent engagement that actually shows that actual human beings find it interesting to look at, and that helps us know that we added something to the social media conversation instead of it just being run by bots who are clicking like and trying to get comments. So,
right,
yeah.
Right. And I mean, you know, like looking at Drake, for example, and the partnership he has with Stake, like that's a great example of a brand ambassador that lives and breathes the brand, right? Because it's mm-hmm. gone to the point where, you know, Drake's sport betting habits have even become a meme, right? Like,
yep.
It's the meme online is like, okay, bet the opposite to what Drake is betting. But that's like a common sure. meme of millions of people, right? And it's such an yep. organic, straightforward partnership that just makes sense there, right?
Yeah.
That must be kind of like the dream type of ambassadorship that you would be looking for, right? Like someone who actually yeah. lives and breathes the product.
Yep. Yeah. It's got to be real. And the connection with the brand has to feel, for us anyway, deeper than just gambling. And gambling is like I said, is a really fun pastime that leads to a lot of spontaneous social interaction. I think what people like about betting and gambling is that you never know what's going to happen. And so if you look at even on YouTube, this is going to feel out of a strange direction to go, but I'm just bear with me for a second. YouTube, sure. You know, the one and short form content in general, reaction content is a very popular sort of emerging content category that's happening on those yes. on those mediums. And it all comes down to what better way to know that an experience is authentic and real than to see true spontaneous improvisation. And that, I mean, I'm a fan of theater. I like, you know, I like music. And when you see live music or live theater, especially when it's improvised theater or improvised music, it's just all the more interesting. You might not go home and listen to it on repeat, but in the moment, being in the room, it's fun. And it's the same thing with gambling. When those two, you know, when it hits green on the roulette table, or when it hits your number and you were betting as a group, when you're on the craps table and the shooter's hot, you know, it's fun and you're having a moment. And I think, I think that is a very important sort of connection point for everybody that is in this community. and enjoys gambling, since gambling gets a lot of, you know, negative attention and heat, I think, from the public at times. But you know, even outside of that, we like to think a little bit deeper and connect as deep, you know, a little bit deeper with our creators. And that's why with people like Snoop, for example, when he talks about what it was like starting out or as an artist, or when we talk to people on, you know, YouTube or, you know, some of these social media creators, getting off the ground is the hardest part to do. And sometimes you just need a little bit of help and support. That's the connection that we look for.
Yeah, I like that, Matt. So obviously you built the company with a lot of passion and it's led you to great success, Matt. Mm-hmm. But can you talk a little bit about, have you faced any challenges perhaps along the way of starting the company until today?
Yeah, I think I probably know where you're headed. Yes, we have, like I said, I think what's interesting about our experience at Rubet so far has been that as entrepreneurs, you don't always choose the path or know what's coming next. And you know, when as Rubet sort of has grown as a brand, you know, I think we've learned a number of lessons along the way about the other side of influencer marketing, or the other side of sort of having a large reach, or having a lot of brand awareness, and being able to participate in that conversation. And I think sometimes, during this journey, our inexperience showed. You know, there's been several moments in our sort of, let's call it, trajectory, where I just don't think we necessarily knew the right move, or felt a little paralyzed in contributing, to the conversation. And especially because, it's funny, even to this day, sometimes the people who have kind of been working on the project, you know, when Rubet started, we were just kind of in Slack, and people, I don't even know if you could say that you had a job or not. You just kind of sort of were you were a contractor, you did some contract work. And if you did a good job, you know, you got paid some, and that became more, you know, more and more structured as we went along. But sometimes, you know, you ask somebody what their official sort of title is, or where they fit on an org chart. Like at one point, that was an interesting conversation for us, because we were like, well, I kind of do a little bit of this and this and this, and I like to, but my hard skills are actually over here. So, ownership and some of that decision making that naturally is required in order to scale a business to service an exponentially growing amount of customers is an interesting sort of experience to go through. And scale is all relative, right? It could be you're working as a team of one, and you grow to a team of 10, you know, and in the case of Rubet, we were, you know, a team of 10 and grew to a team of 70, to a team of 130. That all happened very quickly. And, throughout the way, we basically learned where our blind spots were. And some of those blind spots we learned the hard way.
Right. So 2 years ago, of course, famous YouTubers Coffeezilla and Muta released this investigative series criticizing famous Twitch streamers promoting crypto casinos, and in particular criticizing Rubet. What was your reaction when this series was first published?
The reaction was, there were so many emotions at that time. That caught us at a time where we were very much working on the fundamentals of the business, you know, giving people the structure and scope around their roles to try to, like I said, scale the offering. So while we were working inside the business and hiring people and maturing as an organization, when I first saw those videos, actually the first reaction I had was I was upset. I don't know if that's how most people would react or not, but it was the first time I'd ever had the experience where I was like, oh wow, this person is saying things that I do not think are true. I don't believe, I don't agree with any, you know, of these things that are being said. And I don't feel like I have a voice to say it. And, you know, the power of, you know, of an influencer on social media, I think that we didn't necessarily see as Rubet sort of became more and more part of the popular conversation, you know, these trends on social media, getting millions or, you know, or hundreds of millions of views, in the case of, you know, TikTok or something, is having the narrative feel like it's, all of a sudden the counter narrative actually starts to have a lot of value. If everybody's saying good things, you know, you can see it all across regular media there. If everybody's saying good things, then actually the built up pent up value is in saying the not good thing. And that will actually attract, even if it attracts less clicks, it still can proportionally, or, you know, it can still be a large number of clicks. And that series, if you will, like I said, was the first time that I felt, like we didn't have, the sophistication to understand how to quite cope, or, you know, participate in that conversation at the time. But I also think it's important to, and when you look back at those, it's an old series. And I think a lot of that stuff, these sort of incendiary sort of notions or comments, was a product of people not understanding the industry at all, because the industry wasn't as popular as it is today. And the whole market was still educating themselves. You know, this was amongst a time where, I think somebody, there was a trend on social media that said, are the Rubet girls okay? And it was actually a live dealer on a network table, on one of our providers. And I don't want to, name names and get and do all that. But what's interesting about it is that was at a time where the player didn't even necessarily understand that that's not a Rubet employee. That's an employee of a highly regulated, large, publicly traded company. And yet somehow that turns into a meme on social media that says, are the Rubet girls okay? And it, this whole thing, she had a medical emergency and, you know, she fainted, and, it turned into this large conspiracy theory about, her being held against her will or something wild. You know, like I said, it sounds shocking just to say it, but imagine, you know, at the time we were, just sort of working on the business, and then all of a sudden, dealing with these very complicated, kind of, PR-ish problems, and, just didn't have the experience, to, you know, to kind of get involved. So, I mean, I'm glad you asked. It is, it's something that we still, we talk about, you know, today, you know, but we've matured a lot. And I weirdly would also say it had a lot of impact on us in the way that we conduct ourselves, but mostly as an invisible consequence, mostly internally was actually where I felt the most pressure. I felt so bad for our staff. I felt so bad for our employees who were seeing this stuff on YouTube and maybe felt a little nervous about the company or something. But it was years ago. And like I said, I think sometimes when we don't know what to do, we just put our head down and we get to work. That's what we've done. That's what we're doing. And, you know, I think the market has educated themselves. And if you watch that thing with 2024 eyes, you know, that 2020 series or whatever, it's just obvious that it came from a sort of naive place.
Yeah, many misconceptions about the industry for sure during that series. But I want to ask you as well, now, like, looking forward after that series was released, have you changed the way you operate in any significant ways because of that YouTube series? And what came out of it at the end of the day?
Sure. Yeah, well, I think the first thing that changed is we acknowledged that, you know, as fun as it is to, you know, to be entrepreneurial and move fast and break things and figure it out later, You know, there is a sort of there's a reason why corporations have a certain type of you know, structure to the way that they do things. And I guess I mean from an operational sense, you know, specific roles, goals, responsibility. And a funny thing, I don't think at that time I would have foreseen myself having this conversation, and sort of talking about this, and having it be something that I do. We take on a little bit extra responsibility, and, you know, kind of step outside of our comfort zones a little bit. And that's what, you know, that's really, what a lot of, these experiences has taught us. My dad, he likes to say, experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. And, you know, I think some of those hard lessons taught us that, hey, there are still blind spots that exist in the business. We either need to hire the talent and the experience into the group, or, we have to reach out and sort of, take responsibility for, you know, for certain aspects. And, you know, I will broadly say PR, brand, public image, those sorts of things. When we have, we always just went off of what was the customer saying? What does the customer say? You know, what does the player think? And that conversation in the community, we pay very close attention to, and our players say good things about us. You know, we have a lot of happy players. The experience of, sometimes the player wants to turn around and hear, okay, what does the company think? You know, what is Rubet's perspective on something? And for a while there, I don't think any one of us, necessarily felt, worthy of speaking for the entire group at that level. You know, all of our staff. That has changed, you know, and so that has been a major change in the maturing of our organization. And that's probably how we've changed the most over the last, you know, 4 years, 5 years.
Right. It's, in the struggles where you learn the most, perhaps. So consequently, Twitch, there was a raging debate, right, amongst the Twitch streamers and the community on Twitch, what to do with gambling streams after this this YouTube series was released. And after some time, Twitch reacted by banning not the entire section of gambling streaming, but they decided to ban streams from what they called unregulated gambling websites, listing a handful of sites, but leaving out many others. And what was your thoughts when that happened as a consequence? And what, in your opinion, should Twitch have done, do you think, differently?
Yeah, this is where I was saying, these are our biggest growth areas that we've really, you know, that we've really stepped up to and learned about over the last few years. Once again, you know, we have a community, or I should say the company that oversees the community that we very much feel like we were a part of the fabric of. You know, we were working with streamers. We have been working with streamers for a decade or more. And to all of a sudden be sort of exiled from, you know, from a platform that so many people in our community or, you know, in our circle rely on. You know, we used to go to TwitchCon and stuff, and that's where we'd meet up with the people that we, you know, that we worked with, that we feel like we helped build. And then all of a sudden to be sort of outcast and called unregulated is, I want to focus on that word for a second, because that was the one that it really got me. And once again, we felt like we didn't have a voice in the conversation. And I think you're going to hear us, you know, speak up a bit more, when it comes to, you know, some of the things that people say about our industry, because that is where, Rue feels like it can participate more. But it's interesting to be called unregulated, but then to just be part of a small group of operators who were targeted by that whole communication and basically outcast from the community.
Yeah. It felt very targeted, that specific list of like five operators or whatever it was.
Five operators who basically are under the same licenses as probably, go to Twitch right now, you're going to see 50 casinos that, the only difference is they aren't as established. They don't have as large a customer base. And some would argue they're less proven. So in a weird way, I feel like Twitch not only made the wrong choice, it was heavy-handed. It didn't feel like a negotiation. And they basically told us to pack our bags and all go find a different place to be. But it's not because they, it's clearly not because of the reasons that they said, because there are a lot of operators on there that, you know, are brand new. And I don't know, if it's about player protection, yeah, it's an interesting way to go about it.
Right, it felt like a bit of an easy way out, perhaps, to just kill off the debate a bit. But what do you think Twitch should have done instead? Was there a more reasonable path as a response to the kind of community outcry?
Yeah, worked with us, or reached out to us, or had a conversation. Let us participate in this very important aspect of the entire internet community. I think the fact that they didn't, and the fact that the conversation was just sort of closed, shows that it there wasn't really a spirit of collaboration around any of that. And I think if it was about specific issues or actions, etc., why wouldn't you tell us and let us modify our behavior, or let us change what we feel isn't working? I think that that decision was one of the worst ones that they could have made, and I think that they're paying for it. And I think that I think there's a lot of people out there that would agree with me.
Yeah. I can't say I disagree, Matt, on that side. It's an incredibly difficult community to moderate at the same time, right? Like you can definitely see the point that you bring to the table here, that there's differences they can make, but to moderate a live community like that must be incredibly challenging. I mean, but you know, as a consequence to that decision by Twitch, of course, Kick.com came to be. Mm-hmm. Right, and with more, let's say, liberal community guidelines, and Kick.com hasn't been without its own controversies, of course. But what were your thoughts, and what are your thoughts on Kick and the future on that platform?
Yeah, I mean, I think Kick has done an excellent job at navigating a very complicated, cost-intensive, and controversial, sort of rambunctious industry. And I think, I think we owe a lot, to the timing of that platform. I think I don't envy the types of decisions or, the situation that Kick must find themselves in all the time. Because at the end of the day, to own a content platform, the platform where people express themselves and say all these different wild things. And I know sort of that free speech element, that independent, aspect of, I guess, of the internet or, content creation is a core tenet of Kick. They try to keep hands off. And, I think we all know, and Rubet probably knows better than most, that that can go sideways on you at times. So like I said, I don't envy that. I think that, for operators such as Rue, it always comes down to, we feel we've been treated fairly. We feel like, our streams do well over there. I think obviously what's tough is at the end of the day, every business has to turn a profit. It's beholden to wherever the dollars come from. And when Twitch kicked everybody off, it was because of the controversy, and controversy sort of kind of bleeds into the advertisers not wanting their ads shown on certain, you know, inventory, and it just sort of starts to mess with the fundamentals of the business. And I think with Kick, you know, I don't keep up on everything, so I don't really know the revenue model, and but I know it's not ad supported. And at the end of the day, we are all beholden to the people who pay our bills. And so I'm impressed, and I hope and am encouraged that platform, you know, maintains, you know, kind of the independent sort of objective approach to operators like Rubet that it has, being as it has obviously extremely close affiliations with Stake. So, yeah.
Moving into the future here a bit now, Matt, how do you, what's your in general view of the future of the industry and the Rubet's place in it? Is there perhaps any trends that you pay attention to, and kind of where we're heading? It'd be interesting to hear your view there.
Yeah. Well, I think the piece that excites us is just creating more products and opportunities for the community to engage with each other and just kind of have fun. The concept of a bet like I was talking about, that social experience of betting with the community it forges strong relationships between people that I think is really fun. And that's our most, that's the biggest thing that attracts, I would say, most of the people at Rubet to the space in general, is the social aspect. So I think, from Rue, you're going to see us create more products or more ways for people to engage with the brand. We obviously have Rubet.com, we have Rubet.fun. We have some other ideas for things along the way, for ways to engage the community no matter where you live or, you know, where you are. I think when it comes to games, we also really enjoy making games. You know, I don't know, we have this silly a chicken game. I call it the chicken game. But it's called Mission Uncrossable, and it's basically like a take on Frogger, and a chicken sort of runs across the road. And, we see that game and some of our others still do very well on social, and we pay a lot of attention to that sort of organic engagement around our content. So like we were saying before, with influencers and creators, ambassadors, all of that needs to be organic. And that's usually what we pay attention to, is what's the actual engagement, removing bots, because bots are everywhere on the internet. But, what's the actual engagement? And that's how we feel we've succeeded. The same thing goes with games and with, platform features and stuff. How do those perform, around content? So, I think you're going to see us build and continue to invest, in the tech, that enables unique experiences, because Rubet is homegrown. So we have a lot more, the platform is homegrown, and we built it from scratch. So we have a lot more flexibility than if we had used more of a templated sort of platform for the casino. So you can expect us to build an awful lot of stuff. That's what we're focused on this year.
Brilliant. You mentioned something interesting there, Matt, which has been an alien concept to the legacy part of the industry, which is the social aspect of the kind of online gambling experience. So inherently, the online gambling experience has been a very lonely experience, right? It's just the player and the game. And in recent years, even the word social has been kind of frowned upon a bit. Suppliers and operators have been very scared of kind of opening up the database to be connected with each other, I think. And it's a quite interesting kind of perspective, because most other industries are not scared to introduce the customers to each other. And, you come from the Counter-Strike background, the Web3 background, which is incredibly community driven. The community, it is everything in those sectors, right? And How do you think about kind of community building in the online gambling setting? Is that something that you think about? Is that important to Rubet for the future as well, do you think?
Yes. Yes, period. I think, I think especially on the tech side, developers and in the crypto side, developers and communities sharing what they're making and creating with each other and letting others sort of take and mirror and kind of build off of that, it just leads to a faster progression, a faster iterative cycle for the entire industry. So we're seeing tech being built faster than ever because the conversation is just, there's just more people engaged in the conversation. I think when companies sort of clutch onto and try to stay, you know, keep everything private and proprietary, sure, they may maintain an advantage for a little while, but the player suffers, and they eventually get disrupted and surpassed. You know, we are part of, I think, a larger conversation. Like I said, that, you know, there's a handful of, I think, us operators that pay a lot of attention to each other and secretly admire each other's work. You know, I think that's the thing. We admire each other's work, and you almost see games and trends. They've always sort of played off of each other. You know, it seems like you get a popular fruit game, and there's 50 fruit games, or something like that. But now, when it comes to some of the product features that are coming out, you really see a lot of that tech kind of spread, and then somebody takes just their kind of unique spin on it, and it's almost like people are like, to use a music analogy, it's like a remix. You know, it's faster to share content and code than it's ever been. Open source code, I think, also is just more trustworthy. It gets validated and vetted by an entire community of developers, and that's why, I mean, like I said, I admire crypto and Web3 just in general. Self-sovereignty and all the ownership. But anyway, I think that is, I think the way that the industry is progressing, and social media, I was right there with criticizing social media as a productive form of advertising. Or you can't measure it. It's more, gets lumped in this brand bucket. But I think the industry has turned now into seeing that there's a ton of value, and it was slept on for a long time. Or maybe social just needed to progress to a place where it is now. But the online community, the community conversation about your brand, if nobody's talking about you, then it's really hard to get discovered. Now, you can't do it through billboards and advertisements.
Matt, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for giving me your time today. And I'm looking forward to see what the future holds for Rubet. Thank you so much for today.
Yeah, thanks, Pierre. I appreciate the opportunity.